244. There was a time when people were accustomed to designate the Germans with the label profound. Now, when the most successful type of the new Germanism craves completely different honours, and perhaps finds briskness lacking in everything profound, it is almost timely and patriotic to doubt whether we were not deceiving ourselves previously with that praise. In short, whether German profundity is not basically something else, something worse, and something which, thank God, we are about to succeed in removing. So let's make the attempt to learn to think differently about German profundity. For that, we don't have to do anything except a little vivisection on the German soul. The German soul is, above all, multifaceted, with different origins, more cobbled together and stratified than truly constructed. That comes from how it emerged. A German who would dare to claim, "Alas, two souls live inside my breast," would be seriously violating the truth, or, putting the matter more correctly, would lag behind the truth by several souls. As a people of the most monstrous mixing and stirring together of races, perhaps even with an excess of pre-Aryan elements, as a people in the middle in every sense, the Germans are more incomprehensible, more extensive, more contradictory, more unknown, more unpredictable, more surprising, more terrifying to themselves than other people are to themselves. They elude definition, and for that reason are the despair of the French. It's typical of the Germans that with them the question, "What is German?" never dies away. Kotzebue certainly knew his Germans well enough. "We have been acknowledged," they cheer to him, but Sant also thought he knew them. Jean-Paul knew what he was doing when he expressed his anger over Fichte's false but patriotic flatteries and exaggerations. But is it likely that Goethe's thinking about the Germans was any different from Jean-Paul's, even if he thought he was right in his opinion about Fichte? What did Goethe really think about the Germans? But he never spoke clearly about many things around him, and all his life he knew how to keep a delicate silence. He probably had good reasons for that. What's certain is that the wars of liberation did not make him look up in a happier mood, any more than the French Revolution. The event which made him rethink his Faust, and indeed the entire problem of man, was the appearance of Napoleon. There are words of Goethe in which, as if from a foreign country, he denies with an impatient heart what the Germans reckon as something they can be proud of. The famous German disposition he once defined as leniency with the weaknesses of strangers and with their own. Was he wrong in that? It's a characteristic of the Germans that one is rarely completely wrong about them. The German soul has within it lanes and connecting paths. In it there are high points, hiding places, dungeons. Its lack of order has a great deal of the charm of something full of secrets. On the secret routes to chaos, the German knows what he is doing. And just as everything loves its own metaphorical lightness, so the German loves the clouds and everything associated with a lack of clarity, with becoming, with twilight, with dampness. Any kind of uncertainty, shapelessness, shifting around, or developing, he senses as something profound. In himself, the German man is nothing. He is becoming something. He is developing himself. Hence, developing is the essential German discovery and invention in the great realm of philosophical formulas, a governing idea which, along with German beer and German music, is working to Germanize all Europe. Foreigners stand there amazed at and attracted to the riddles which the contradictory nature underlying the German soul presents to them, something Hegel organized into a system and Richard Wagner finally even set to music. Good-natured and treacherous, such a juxtaposition, a contradiction if applied to any other people, unfortunately justifies itself too often in Germany. Just live for a while among the Swabians. The ponderousness of the German scholar, his social tastelessness, gets on alarmingly well with an inner agility in dancing on a tightrope and a light impudence, faced with which all the gods have by now learned about fear. If people want an ad oculus, visual demonstration of the German soul, Let them only look into German taste, into German arts and customs. What a boorish indifference to taste! See how there the noblest and the meanest stand next to each other, how disorderly and rich this entire spiritual household is. The German drags his soul along with him. He drags along everything he experiences. He digests his experiences badly. He's never finished with them. German profundity is often only a difficult and hesitant digestion, and just as all the habitual invalids or the dyspeptics have an inclination for comfort, so the German loves openness and conventional probity. How comfortable it is to be open and conventional. Today that is perhaps the most dangerous and most successful disguise which the German knows, this trusting, cooperative, cards-on-the-table nature of German honesty. It is his true Mephistophelian art. With it he can still go far. The German lets himself go as he gazes with true blue, empty German eyes, and foreigners immediately confuse him with his nightgown. What I wanted to say is this: let German profundity be what it will. When we are entirely among ourselves, perhaps we'll allow ourselves to laugh about it. We'll do well to hold its appearance and its good name in honour in future, and not to dispose of our old reputation as people of profundity too cheaply for Prussian boldness and Berlin wit and sand. It's clever for a people to make itself and let others think it profound, clumsy, good-natured, honest, unwise. That could even be profound. Finally, one should be a credit to one's name. Not for nothing are we called the Tuscher people, the deceiving people.